Hi, I'm Wendy Holt, and I'm going to be presenting the results of a survey we did of workforce capacity of the children's mental health workforce in Massachusetts. So Massachusetts is in an enviable position from the perspective of many states. I think we have the highest rate of psychiatrists, the second highest rate of psychologists, the highest rate of social workers, so we should be golden. However, you know, very little is known about how many child providers are available. These workforce studies are often done for adults or generically for everybody. And in Massachusetts, along with our high rate of providers, we also have quite high utilization rates compared to national studies. Our rate for Medicaid utilization is 40% higher than national rates for outpatient mental health, and our rate for outpatient mental health for commercial plans are twice as high. So we're kind of starting out on the high end here. This project was funded by the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts Foundation with the purpose of estimating the need for children's mental health services in Massachusetts, looking at the capacity of licensed providers to deliver those services, and document the challenges in meeting the current demand. We did three different kinds of work. We did a targeted literature review, and the main piece was the mail and web survey of licensed mental health professionals in Massachusetts. And we supplemented that with key informant and stakeholder interviews. And we were guided by a quite multidisciplinary, wide group of a kind of a steering committee. We did a prescriber survey that went to all psychiatrists and all clinical nurse specialists. So that was a survey of the universe of the licensed providers in the state. For the non-prescribers, which included psychologists, mental health counselors, marriage and family therapists, and social workers, we did a random sample that was adjusted by provider presence across six regions of the state. We ended up with a 19% overall response rate to the survey, which was a male survey. So I think we had the capacity to allow people to do it electronically if they wished. Once we got the surveys back, we had to kind of determine, well, how did we define a child provider? We had no way, a priori, to identify which of the licensed providers were child providers. So we asked everybody questions about a number of things. But we cut down the sample to those that met this criteria. We set it quite widely. We looked at those who had a caseload of at least 10% children and adolescents. And we found that 37% of the responding providers met that threshold. Within those that met the threshold, two-thirds of them approximately had caseloads that were more than half children. And this gives you a sense of the composition of the child provider sample, with the biggest groups being psychologists and independent social workers. But, you know, 11% for psychiatrists and 6% for clinical nurse specialists. So not probably all that different from the composition in the workforce. We certainly found the demographics of the child providers were not a great match for the children in Massachusetts. The providers were 72% female, nearly half over the age of 55, and 94% white, whereas 25% of children in our state are non-white. In the Boston region, it's very high, 50% of children are black or Hispanic in the Boston area. And over 15% of children in the Northeast and Western Mass are Hispanic. 95% of child providers serve English-speaking caseloads, yet a significant proportion serve other languages. 14% of public school children didn't speak English as a first language, and 6% had limited English proficiency. So that's a clear mismatch in the ideal. So we did find, we'd heard there'd been lots of talk about it's impossible to find a child provider in the state. But we did find that there were a number of providers that could almost always accept new clients. On average, 16% across the board could almost always accept new clients. Psychiatrists, however, were the most busy, with 56% maintaining a wait list and not being able to take people in. So we kind of saw somewhat both sides of the coin, and some regions were, especially in the West, had less availability than what we saw on average overall. So this kind of explains to some degree why people might have trouble finding a provider. This shows their participation in the far left is public and private panels. The next one is private panels only. The next is public panels. And the final one is neither public nor private. So you can see for psychiatrists, a full 17% participate in neither public nor private networks. You have to private pay. You have to pay yourself out of your own pocket to see those folks. 22% are only in private networks, so that you can't see them under Medicaid or public kinds of things. They were at the most extreme. But this is part of what's going on, is not everybody is really available through the avenues that are most affordable for the people that would be needing them. Then I went backwards. So we asked a lot of questions about why they would or wouldn't participate in panels. The disincentives that at least 20% of child providers identified were the administrative burden. That was both to apply to be in it and to get authorizations and get paid. Lack of compensation for necessary collateral work and low payment rates. Well, this also surprised us. We stuck this in from another workforce survey. We asked people's plans in 5 years, whether they were going to leave the state or leave direct care, and we found super high percentages are planning to leave the state or the field. And it wasn't just those that were older and getting ready to retire, which is a problem in itself. 43% of those that were less than age 35 were planning to do this, and 51% of those age 35 to 54. Had we known this was going to be such an important question, we would have asked two questions and found out whether they wanted to move out of the state because it's too expensive to live there or leave direct care. But this was really our key finding, and we didn't see it coming. Our replacement rates for estimate of new licenses are not going to fix this problem. It's roughly half of what would be needed for people coming in. So we found out a bit about, strategies for improving satisfaction among child providers included financial support and higher pay. We did find that we compared the child providers to those that fell out of the definition, and they spent between 7% and 12% of their time on unreimbursed collateral, which was more than adult providers. And the higher their percentage of caseload spent on kids, the higher the proportion of their time that was unreimbursed collateral. They also cited significantly a third of them a decrease in administrative demands. And for some of them, a smaller proportion, but perhaps significant, receiving relevant training and supervision would improve their satisfaction. So incentives to increase work with children, we asked those that were classified as adult providers. Most of them, two-thirds, don't want to work with children, so they might as well give up on them. But for 20%, if they were to receive relevant training and supervision, they would be willing to consider working with kids. Financial support for collateral work would make a difference. Reduction of liability and higher pay came in as smaller things that you could do. So this is what we came up with recommendations. One is to just, in general, improve information about the mental health workforce. If at licensure, why not collect information on race, ethnicity, language, the geographic area served, not necessarily the, you know, the address you want your application mailed back to. And I should say there, whether, you know, whether you, your service specialties, are you willing to serve kids? Develop approaches to track mental health access, capacity, and demand routinely across the state. And develop coordinated strategies to then to address identified workforce issues kind of statewide. Not providers aren't really in a position to do this. If the state has information, then that they are in a position to look at what they need to do. Information is also important for families. Part of the difficulty in accessing mental health providers is getting information on who's in your panel, what kind of care they do, whether they're going to meet your special needs. A single referral source would really aid families in making a good match. And we also found that every different professional group was developing referral services, but you might want to have information about both a psychologist and a social worker that specialized in cognitive behavioral therapy. That might be the important thing, not whether one was one or the other. So, and if you lived in a part of the state where there wasn't a lot of choice, you'd want to be able to get information on anybody that can serve you at once. It's just really important to start addressing providers' concerns so that they stay in the field. We recommended that that prescribers, that commercial and public health plans communicate directly with prescribers and their representatives to work collaboratively together to develop cross-cutting strategies for improving their satisfaction and their willingness to participate. Respect, I think, is a key aspect that a lot of prescribers feel quite dissed by health plans and very disinclined to work with them, and they need to know there's a partnership and respect. And you need to come up with payment rates and models that, that actually reimburse for, you know, what it costs to run a practice and reduce the kind of administrative burden that that is costly and gets in their way. And we recommend compensation for the care coordination that is inherent in children's mental health. And in terms of being needing to work with multiple with family members and schools and all the other providers in a child's life. And finally, expand and improve training. It's really important to train students to treat ethnically and linguistically diverse children and their families if we're not yet to the point of recruiting workforce that's matching, it needs to be competent. Existing loan forgiveness programs provide a foundation that can be used to, especially to target a more diverse group. Clinical nurse specialists actually indicated more willingness and interest in potentially serving children than any of the other provider groups, so that seemed to be an encouraging possibility. Strengthening the internship system financially and programmatically. One way Massachusetts does allow it in the Medicaid system, well-supervised interns can be billed for, and it does help support the internship programs, but they're kind of run on a shoestring, and many places are cutting back on the internships they offer. And students need to be prepared to provide evidence-based services. Training really has to keep up with the field. Whoops. So this is just the information. The full report is available from the website of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Foundation. And I just wanted also to acknowledge my co-authors, Jessica Linkins and Jessica Bain. Karen is no longer with the Lewin Foundation, but we were working with Lewin at the time, and the head of my company, Dick Dougherty. So, thank you.